So those of you who have sat retreats here at IRC before know that many times on these retreats we have a theme for the retreat. And this week our theme is, it's very near to my heart, the theme that we picked for the week. It is kind of a reflection of the integration in our practice, or the development, the cultivation in our practice of two interwoven threads, that of the cultivation of wisdom, of the development of understanding, and the cultivation of love. And so we'll be exploring these two strands through interweaving two classic teachings that the Buddha, that's offered in the Buddhist teachings, that of the four right efforts and the four Brahmaviharas. And so the four right efforts, to me, are really deeply connected to the wisdom teachings of the Buddha, because we are, with our right effort, the four right efforts, for those of you who have not potentially heard this teaching, it's founded or grounded in a basic understanding of what is it that leads us towards happiness, well-being, and what is it that leads us in the direction of suffering. This is a very foundational understanding in what the Buddha taught, this distinction between what helps us free ourselves from the habits of mind that constrict and tighten us, and what are those habits of mind that constrict and tighten us. And so this distinction in the Buddhist teachings is the Pali term for this distinction between what helps us and what doesn't help us. What helps us is kusala, skillful, wholesome. What doesn't help us is akusala, unskillful, unwholesome. And this division, or this distinction between these two, is based on the very natural way our being is, you know, that seems like almost designed, a very natural movement, that when we act out of greed, aversion, confusion, delusion, it tends to create the conditions for us to get caught in more greed, aversion, delusion, to be caught in our reactivity more and more. And so we move in the direction of struggle and suffering and distress and reactivity when we act out of greed, aversion, and delusion. And this is a natural thing that happens for human beings. It's not something that is somebody deciding something, that this is good or this is bad. It's much more practical. These kind of movements of heart, these movements towards greed, aversion, and delusion, will create suffering in our lives and in the lives of the people we love and in the world. And when we act out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, or to put it more positively, non-greed, generosity, non-aversion, love, and non-delusion, wisdom, it tends to lead us in the direction more towards happiness, well-being, letting go of all of those constricting movements of heart. And so this kind of understanding of what's skillful and what's unskillful is a very foundational wisdom teaching of the Buddha. It's a foundation of right view, the first factor of the Eightfold Path. What helps us move towards freedom? And the teachings on right effort use this understanding and encourage us to let go of, to refrain from those conditions, refrain from following through on things that will lead us in the direction of these unskillful, unwholesome actions. That's the first right effort, to refrain from the arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen. The second is to abandon or let go of or release when unwholesome states, unskillful states do come up, to let go. And on the side of the skillful, to cultivate those skillful states that are not present yet, and to maintain them or strengthen them as they are present. And so these four practices, really, ways of practicing, ways of meeting our experience, of exploring our experience through these efforts, we begin to recognize what's helpful and what's not helpful and learn some skillful ways to navigate them. And as we do that, so this is a wisdom teaching, the teachings on the right wise effort, and yet right embedded in wise effort is the letting go of things that constrict the heart and the cultivating of things that open the heart, of those qualities of heart and mind that open the heart. And this interweaving of wisdom and love happens in a couple of different ways. You know, one of the ways that it happens is that as we do find our way to meeting and holding with mindfulness both the skillful and the unskillful, as we hold and meet with mindfulness the unskillful qualities of mind, it actually creates the conditions for them to begin to release. And as those unskillful conditions begin to release, there's more room for love, compassion, and wisdom to more naturally be available to us. And as we cultivate the wholesome qualities, love, wisdom, as we cultivate wholesome qualities, the qualities of love and compassion and joy and equanimity are some of those wholesome qualities that we encourage. And so this interweaving of wisdom and love happens in a couple of different ways. One, just through the releasing of the constricted heart. As a constricted heart lets go, very naturally, love and compassion and joy begin to arise. And we can also more actively bring an intention or direction or a kind of a movement towards these wholesome qualities of mind. The Buddha encourages us in one sutta to develop mindfulness accompanied by love, to develop mindfulness accompanied by compassion, accompanied by joy, and accompanied by equanimity. He encourages us to develop energy accompanied by love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. He encourages us to develop all of these awakening factors, factors that support our minds move in the direction of freedom. He encourages us to develop them accompanied by love. Some places in the commentaries, it says this means that you're using, developing mindfulness with love as the object or experience that you focus on. So kind of like a mindfulness of a metta practice, bringing actually a conscious metta practice and focusing on the cultivation of mindfulness through that. So some of the commentaries say that's what this teaching means. But I think it also can mean that we encourage mindfulness and the way that we practice to be imbued with the attitude of love and compassion. The care, what we are cultivating here really is a loving attention, a kind awareness, really welcoming whatever's arising. Whatever arises in our experience can belong here in our container of loving awareness. And so this kind of framing to me brings a beautiful quality right into the mindfulness. It interweaves these two teachings of wisdom and love right together. And over the next few evenings, we'll be exploring the connection between the cultivation of each of these wise efforts with one of the Brahmaviharas, with one of the qualities of love. The Brahmaviharas are that Pali term means divine abodes, and the four divine abodes are these qualities of love. Love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And so we'll be exploring this interweaving of love and wisdom through these two teachings over the coming days of the retreat.
Perhaps the interweaving of love and wisdom also plays out with the refuges and the precepts. And I don't know which one is love and which one is wisdom, or they're both love and both wisdom. But I associate the refuges with the heart, with faith, with some of the same kind of, from the same place within that the Brahmaviharas come from, love. And I associate the precepts a lot with living a wise life, life that doesn't cause harm to self or others. And so at the beginning of retreat, we evoke these qualities of love and wisdom to support us on the retreat and as a way of supporting our community. I think of the refuges that we mostly do it we connect to the idea, this heartfelt connection, hopefully, to the refuges as a powerful support for our own practice. The refuges are kind of a pointing to something very deep teachings about kind of what supports our life and what our life even is. And that the precepts certainly support ourselves, but they also a way of supporting others. Particularly important on retreat, where the goal is to support all of us equally, to be able to do this deep work, to be able to touch meaningfully into the depth of our hearts, depth of our inner life, and to do it in an environment of safety and respect and love, is that to do that, we want to create the ideal conditions and to have a heightened sensitivity to how we interact and live with each other. And I doubt that there's going to be killing and stealing here, but I think that the evoking them here is the precepts. We don't just do it for our conscious mind and what's logical, but we do it for something deep inside, maybe something which is almost primordial. We come from a long lineage of human beings, many of our ancestors who have not had experiences of safety, who've gone through horrendous challenges and difficulties, wars, and much of human history for many people has been very difficult. And it continues right up until today, and maybe some of you as well. And that to be able to declare our alignment, our commitment to the precepts, is a way of speaking to this deep heart of ours, this deep roots inside of us. So something deeper than we can even know about can relax, can feel at home, can feel this is a safe place. I can come out now. It's okay to show up and be here in an open way. I don't have to be hidden anymore, closed down. So we do it at the beginning of the retreat as a ritual, both the refuge and the precepts. And rituals speak to this language that are meant really to touch something that's below the conscious mind. And so, you know, we're touching into tender places in this practice in all of us. The precepts are, you know, not to kill and not to steal. Here on the retreat, it's to be celibate, to not engage in sexual activity. You might have sexual thoughts, but the idea is to really keep that to yourself, not have it spill out through your eyes or what you look at or anything. And then to be honest, to avoid the best of your ability, to avoid speaking mistruths, what's not true. And then to avoid consuming things which are intoxicating, which confuse the mind or go in the opposite direction that we're trying to do here in cultivating mindfulness. And so not taking recreational drugs or alcohol. It's a very, very, very meaningful thing to do for ourselves and for the community around us. Sometimes there's a tendency on these retreats to then, as we talk about the precepts, to also talk about the noble silence. Sometimes it's associated with the fourth precept, that not just to be honest, but don't give yourself opportunities to be dishonest. And don't speak unless it's functional, unless, you know, you need to, teachers, or there's a real need to, or sometimes in the work meditation you're doing, you might have to be working with someone, and a little bit of speech is needed. But to keep that really having to do with the work and taking care of things and not social speech. And it's called noble silence, which I kind of like the idea of nobility, the dignity, and the kind of from a sense of, you know, personal value and worth and importance, that from that place we're really caring for ourselves, that we're doing this deep work here. And what you don't know if you end up speaking with people here is you don't know what tender depths in them are coming out, maybe for the first time. And you don't know that even, it might seem like a simple thing to say hello to, even say hello to someone. You don't know, you know, where they're at and what impact that's going to have. And I've seen that on retreat. Someone literally just said hello, and we had to process that afterwards. We had to work through it and what that triggered. And what the person who said hello didn't know was that the person who received the hello had a traumatic background of people who had done something similar and then taken advantage of them. And so in this environment here, it was magnified and it was very difficult to hear it. So to Really stay in. And then if we stay with ourselves and discover ourselves and what's going on in here, this is where the refuges are so valuable. Because what we're touching into in this retreat is our personal lives, for sure, the legacy of a life, of whatever life you've had that shows up here, the difficulties and the challenges and the joys and the delights that you've had. But also we're touching into something that is non-personal or transpersonal, or I like to think of it, that inside of you, that which is not you, that inside of you which is not part of your conscious identity and association and definition of who you are, that which is deeper, the Dharma that's in you, the processes of life that's within you, that's deeper than you can imagine, that that will support you, that will guide you, that the laws of our heart will support you if you align yourself with them. The movement of the mind towards freedom will support you if you align yourself and trust it. And so to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha is, I think of it as taking refuge in yourself, but that which is deeper than your idea of self. That it's and some people would say it's the Dharma, which is everywhere. It's not, you know, the very idea of finding it inside of yourself, that I like that idea. Even that can be seem too personal or too self-centered. And there's even, you know, the Dharma is bigger than that. And the Buddha represents both the person who discovered an amazing process, freeing process, amazing, that this process moves towards freedom, and the person who discovered the awakening that comes with that. But also we take refuge in the Buddha, take refuge in our own capacity to become freer, and our own capacity to be awake. And it's a potential that resides within us. And I trust that all of you have had some little taste of freedom, of awakening, of clarity that's arise, that's beneficial. The Buddha represents doing that to a complete degree, to fulfill the potential that our hearts have, and to feel that there's a potential in here that is so safe, it's so enlightening, it so creates the context to hold anything whatsoever, no matter the challenges that there are. The awakened mind, this potential we have, knows how to be present in a wise, compassionate, and peaceful way with whatever arises. So to remind yourself, yes, you have that potential. Yes, this is here. There might be times during this retreat that you need to remind yourself of that, and that reminding might be enough to see you through it. Take refuge in the Dharma. You certainly take refuge in this process of the four right efforts, that if you engage in skillful ways and avoid the unskillful ways, you set in motion, then I think of as a natural, almost biological unfolding and resolving and development of the heart and the mind that will also protect you and support you. You don't have to be responsible for how the practice unfolds for you, more than creating all the right conditions for it. Take refuge in the Dharma is take refuge. Yes, there is a process here. There is a unfolding, a pattern that you're joining into, that you're aligning yourself to, that will carry you along if you really trust it. And to take refuge in the Sangha can mean a variety of things. But for me, I take refuge in all of you for this retreat. You're my refuge, and we are each other's refuge. And the level of goodness here and sincerity here and dedication to practice here is pretty phenomenal. And it can be found in other places in the world if you go traveling and looking for it. It's not like we're like unique. There's lots of practice centers around. But you know, you're a little bit hard-pressed to go into some downtown urban setting and, you know, just walk around, find a local retreat center where there's 40 people who sit quietly for a week. It's pretty unusual, I would say. And to have people who to be sitting with people who have this interest and this dedication is a fantastic thing. Some people say that the word Sangha should be limited to the monastic community, and that lay people shouldn't be called Sangha. And so that could be. We can maybe, if we want to give them that right to define what the word means, then I'll just tell you that for this week, you're monastics. And I say that with a lot of respect, because you're going to be practicing as dedicated, one of you, if there is one of you who's like the one who's practicing the least during this week, you're the one, right? Not me, it must be me. You're practicing more than 90% of the monastics in Thailand. You're more engaged in a serious and dedicated way than many, many monastics. We think that monastics are all practicing seriously. Many of them, I was in Thailand and they were watching TV and smoking cigarettes. And a lot of them don't meditate, oddly enough. It's surprising for us to think that. What you're doing here is phenomenal. So to take refuge, you are taking refuge in the monastic community for this week, people who are dedicated to practice like this. And may we support each other and be inspired by each other. And when you find that the practice is hard here, and you find it hard to kind of keep going, just look around. Feel around. Hear around. You're around phenomenal efforts and dedication in this room here. And it's a great thing to be supported by it. So at the beginning of a retreat, we evoke these two things, our commitment, our love, our heartfeltness, our dedication to something which is not just our own efforts, but rather something larger context that's holding us and supporting our practice. And that also that joins us together in a shared kind of sense of purpose here and what we're doing. So with the refuges. And then also we do this, ritual of the precepts and aligning ourselves, committing ourselves to try to live in a way that's where we give the gift of safety to ourselves and the community around us. And we should never underestimate how significant it is to do this. And we do it out loud, so we all, our voices come into it, and that which, and deep inside of us can hear, all of us kind of coming together in a shared kind of commitment for the week. So some of you might not know the refuges and the precepts, so I'll chant one line at a time in Pali for the refuges, and you can repeat after me. And I think part of the ritual is to call and response is part of the sense of hearing it being said by the teacher, and kind of like an invitation for you to kind of repeat, your invitation to step into this world of the refuges. And then you do, but you're chanting in response. And the first chant is a salutation to the Buddha, homage to the Buddha. We do it three times. And then we do the refuges three times. And the second time we start with the Pali word for a second time, tutiyampi. And the third time, for the third time, is tatiyampi. And if you can't kind of pick it up just because I do one line, you get full credit for humming along. Namo tassa bhagavato. I'll do first. Bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
And then we'll do the precepts, and I'll break each precept into two parts, and you can repeat after me for each part. For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself not to harm.
For the sake of our practice together, I commit myself not to take what is not given. For the sake of our practice together, I commit myself to celibacy.
For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself to not speaking mistruth. And for the sake of our practice together, I commit myself not to intoxicate my mind.
I commit myself not to intoxicate my mind.
So from the depths of my heart, I thank you for that. I don't take it as a light thing or an incidental thing to do refuges and precepts, and I appreciate it very much. And I appreciate very much that we're going to have this chance to practice together for this week. And I'm looking forward to it. And Andre and I will do what we can to support you as we go along. And again, for those of you who are new, it's the design here that we finish the evening events at 8:30 so that you could hopefully go to bed early. We recognize that people travel from far away, or just getting ready to come on retreat, even if you're local, it takes a lot of planning, staying up late and packing. So it's nice to be able to get to sleep and And so if you're able to sleep, that's great. And if you'd like to stay up and sit more, if you feel bright and awake, the meditation hall is always open and available. And please, you can always do that. And we'll see you in the morning. And I say, well, if I may, one more thing about for the people who are new. So maybe it's been said already to you, but so at 6:40 tomorrow morning, after the first morning sitting, there's a cleaning period called Sangha Service, and you all have assignments. And the two managers are roaming around during that time to answer any questions you might have. If you don't know where the tools are or exactly what you're supposed to do, you can just look for them or find them, and they're available. So thank you, and sleep well.